Okay, welcome back to the Scientific Look at the Bible. And today we're going to look at the question, if God made the universe, who made God? Now, this is a different departure from a lot of the things we looked at that are mainly science-based. This is mainly philosophy-based. And that's kind of those Greek guys that kind of sat around and ate grapes and kind of thought of a bunch of stuff instead of doing real work. So that's kind of where philosophy comes from. So anyhow, we're going to look at this question. And what I want to do, it's easy to throw out, for people to throw out questions like this, and I want to, philosophy is basically ordered and structured thought and a rational type of thought. So that's what I'm going to do tonight, is take a rational, ordered type of thought approach to this question. And I'm going to give two responses to this question, two things that I'm going to deal with that are putting the question in perspective, and then three responses to the question. So there'll be five kind of major points I'll go through. So that's kind of the framework. Now, I thought about how to phrase things, and I want to, you guys be aware of the way I'm using the word you. Take that, kind of depersonalize my use of the word you, because when I get to things that points, I think, well, if you think this way, then you must consider this. And I felt we should have phrased that, well, if one thinks this way, then, well, for point number one, I thought that would get kind of confusing. So when I use the word you, don't kind of personalize that. I'm not trying to single anybody out. It's just kind of the only way I can say, if somebody thinks a certain way, then here's what you got to consider. So to kind of put that in perspective. So here's where, let's go ahead and dive in. So God made the universe, who made God? Well, before I address that, there's two points I want to get to put that in perspective. One is you need to apply that question equally to all ideas about existence. Very often people ask that question, well, I can't believe in God because if God made the universe, who made God? Well, then you have to ask that person, then what made the universe? And whatever you think did, what made that? Because you, if you are stumbled or hindering the view of a theological thing by, well, I can't understand who made God, then wherever we came from, you've got to come up with an explanation of what made where we came from. Okay, you've got to apply that question equally. If you cannot think of another explanation for the universe that doesn't stump you the question, what made that, then you really have to disregard the question. You can't single out a theistic view of things as having that question as a critique for that, but not other views. You understand what I mean by that? Okay, second point I want to make, the question is really a theological non-issue, okay? Because if God made us, okay, and if something else made God, we are not responsible to what made God. We're responsible to God because he made us. It's not like we could ever stand before God and say, I didn't honor you because I don't understand who made you. Well, that's not our responsibility. If something created God, we're only told what we need to know. Okay, if there is a God, if look at what's in the Bible, we're only told what we need to know, not all that there is to know. So if something did create God, it's not our responsibility. You know, we're accountable to our maker, not if there is a maker of our maker. So theologically, it's not an issue. Okay, to kind of put it, there's another sort of another view to it. So now we're going to step away from that, and I want to now look at the question, address the question directly, if God made the universe, who made God? And I'll give three responses to this. These responses are going to go from the simple to the complex, and they'll also get progressively more meaningful, but also if you tie these three responses together, they all kind of go together as well. The first one will be law of causality, second will be what is the only rational option, and the third response will be we'll talk about dimensionality. So now we're going to kind of with all that introduction sort of die in. So law of causality, law of cause and effect, okay? And our dimension of time is defined as that dimension where causes precede effects. Okay, that's kind of how we can see how things progress in time, cause and effect. There are no uncaused effects. All effects must have a cause. And so you ask a question, wouldn't something have had to make God for God's existence to not violate the law of causality? Well, the answer is no. That's not the case. The law of causality says that every effect has a cause. It does not say everything has a cause. There are things that are not effects. And things that are not effects don't need causes. For example, the laws of mathematics. The fact that 2 plus 3 equals 5 doesn't need a cause, at least within our universe. You could maybe ask that question about when the universe is created, whose mathematics created. Principles of logic, okay, just are. They don't have causes. So not everything is an effect. God is not effect, and therefore doesn't need a cause. Okay, so it doesn't violate the law of causality. Now, if we look at our universe, we find, and this goes back to some lectures I did earlier, our universe had a beginning. And not only did our universe begin, but dimensions of space and time began as well. And that's confirmed by the theorem of general relativity. So anything tangible in our universe, and anything substance or mass, had to have a cause, had to have a beginning, because our universe had a beginning. Religions that describe God as part of our universe, okay, face the problem of that God needing to be created by something. And we talked about this earlier, that the Bible stands apart. Well, perhaps Islam may as well in this view, but Bible stands apart in saying that God is described as something outside of our universe, working outside of our universe. And you can even infer from what it said, the only best way to interpret it is working outside the dimensions of space and time to bring our universe into creation. Okay. Otherwise, a different description of God as part of a universe would have to have a cause. The biblical description is describing something that doesn't in that sense. Also, cause and effects can't be greater than their causes. And there, I could even get into an interesting discussion of the second law of thermodynamics. If you kind of think about some things about that you could kind of see how effects really can't be kind of greater than their causes. But anyhow, so that's the causality. It's not the most convincing response to a bit, but kind of the simplest. You're probably thinking, if that's the simplest, I hope we get better leave now. But anyhow, I wanted to throw that in there. Before we move on, why we're here, why we're talking about causes and effects, I want to take a tangent and address the question, which isn't really part of this talk, but it's going to be a tangent. Did God make evil? Did God create evil? Okay, well, to look at this question, you first must realize, if you're going to ask that question, you first must realize that evil exists. Okay, there is something called evil. It's if there were no moral absolutes, okay, if all moral choices are just relative, then evil doesn't really exist. It's just a relative definition of something. And in that case, then the question goes away. Did God create evil? Well, if evil doesn't exist because it's all moral relative, there's no question. So to address this question, you must realize that there really is something that's evil, that evil does exist. But the second thing you must realize, that even though I said that evil is something, it exists, evil isn't some thing. Evil's not a thing. Evil's not something tangible you can put in a jar or something you can measure, okay, or some weird gray matter floating around. Evil is a warped action or warped inaction or warped relationship. Okay, like it's warped or perverted or twisted. Okay, action between two things or relationship or something that's twisted and warped. Like you can see a match, you can light a match, same match, you can start a fire to give you warmth, can be used to burn down your neighbor's house type of thing. It's what action are you doing with the match? The match itself is morally neutral. So the fact that evil is not a thing, it doesn't have to be created. It's not something of mass, not a substance. And that's why God doesn't have to create evil. It's something that effectively that perpetrators of evil create by doing that action. The real question then is, why does God allow or permit evil, which we're going to get to next week. But I just wanted to get, while we're talking about causality, just deal with that question, well, did God create evil? And the answer is no. Okay, so now we're going to move on to the second response to that question. If God made the universe, who made God? And I want to look at the options. Okay, basically there are four options out there. The first is that there is some self-existent reality, something that exists entirely on its own. It was not made and is not dependent on anything else for existence. Okay, this is the first thing. Something that doesn't need to be created. Okay, we know that our universe is caused by something, so our universe isn't that. Okay, so either our universe was caused by something that's a self-existent reality, or whatever caused our universe had to have a cause as well. But some place you're going to get to want to answer that question, is there some type of self-existent reality? The second option is what's called an infinite regress, which is if God made the universe and something made God, and then something made what made God, then something made what made the something that made God, and it just goes back infinitely, that infinitely have this kind of chain of things. Third option is the universe is an illusion. Okay, it doesn't exist. So if it doesn't exist, it doesn't need to be created. Fourth option is a creation loop. Okay, like something made our universe. Okay, and our universe will then somehow create something that'll make something else, and that something else will maybe chain of things and eventually make what made our universe, which made us. And you've got this loop. Like A, it made B, which made C, which made D, and D somehow made A, and it just is this continuous loop. Okay, so you got that infinite loop. So those are the four options. Okay, let me examine these four options, and we're going to see which is the most rational. And I'm going to do the self-existent reality last. So let me go to the second one I mentioned, the infinite regress. Now, it's hard to disprove that there couldn't be an infinite regress of things. This made this, that made this, that made this. It goes on forever. Just really it's discussion that it's not, I don't see it as a rational option. And it'll kind of give you an example when you're dealing with affinities. That imagine if you had a hotel with an infinite number of rooms, okay? And this hotel is full with an infinite number of guests. Every room's taken, the hotel's full, okay? An infinite number of tourists show up and want to get a room in this hotel. Okay, well, the hotel's full, what do? Well, you just ask everybody in the room to vacate the room and move to a room with a room number twice as high as the one they're in. So the guy in room number one moves to two, guy in two moves to four, guy in three moves to six. So what you've done is you've freed up all the odd number rooms. And you can do that, everybody can move to a room number that's twice as big as theirs because you've got an infinite number of rooms. So you just freed up all the odd number rooms, and since there's an infinite number of odd numbers, you've now got an infinite number of empty rooms to bring these infinite number of guests that just showed up. Okay? So you kind of see when you deal with infinities, you get into some really kind of weird, kind of irrational things. And
it just seems to me that you could just, instead of having them move, rooms, you could just have them go to the higher number rooms.
That's right.
Save an infinite number of people trouble.
exactly. So, that, you know, kind of pulling it out of philosophy for a second, scientific theories that involve infinities haven't lasted. For example, it's thought initially that their universe was infinitely old, and that's not the case. We find out you can't get things infinitely cold. There's a limit to how cold you can get something where there's no heat energy at all. Limits in terms of how hot you can get something, in a sense, because things kind of break down. And so you kind of can't make things infinitely small because of quantum mechanics and blah, blah, blah. So basically, infinites in scientific theories haven't really held up. So it's not like I can really disprove that one. I just think we can kind of see this not really the most rational assessment. So let's look at the third. The idea is the universe an illusion, okay? And if the universe is an illusion, then nothing needed to make the universe because it doesn't exist. And so in their case, you don't need a God because you don't need something to create this illusion. Well, there are ways to counter that our universe is an illusion. There are ways to give arguments that, no, it's not an illusion, it's not real. But I don't even have to go there. Because if our universe is an illusion, it doesn't exist, what is having the illusion? Okay? Something must be having this dream. Something must be having this illusion that a universe exists. So now you're left with a something. The fact that you've got a something, you ask up to the question, who made that something? And you're back to the same question again. So the illusion example doesn't get you out of this question, okay, of need, of how did something begin or kind of come into existence. And this is similar to Descartes dealt with this idea. He says, well, what can I trust? What can I kind of believe in a sense? And basically he's wondering, you know, do I even exist? And he came up with that famous quote, because I think, therefore I am. And so if you want to kind of explore this more, look at some of the things that Descartes went through kind of in his things. And he realized that something must exist. Because he thinks he knows, at least he knows he exists, he can kind of start with there that his own existence is validated. But anyhow, so the illusion gets you back to the same question. Last is the creation loop, a series of things. If A made B, B made C, blah, blah, blah. And the problem is there's a number of problems with this thing, okay? First is it would require something in our universe that our universe has the ability to create something of a huge scale that could create something beyond our universe. And that really violates the first and second law of thermodynamics and some other laws. So you've got a lot of scientific problems with that. Also, we find out that there's nothing about our universe that gives the appearance of some massive cycle. And I talked about this with the second law of thermodynamics, that we see our universe is screaming in one direction, that its beginning is much different than what its end is going to be like. It's screaming in one direction. But the other thing is, if there is this infinite loop of A made B, B made C, C made A again somehow, you'd have to ask, where did that loop come from? What created that loop? And again, you're back to that same question, so that doesn't get you out of the problem. Now, interestingly enough, though, when our universe had a beginning, realized our universe was expanding, this thought did come up in terms of you hear the idea of the Big Bang, of our universe expanding out. There's a thought, well, will gravity eventually slow down the expansion, pull everything back to for lack of a better word, they called a big crunch, and with that big crunch then start another Big Bang, and our universe in a sense would bounce, and we'd have this infinite cycle of Big Bang, Big Crunch, Big Bang, Big Crunch. And they thought, okay, that's the way our universe could have a beginning, but it's sort of like an infinite loop of one thing. It just kind of keeps creating itself. So that idea was really entertained in the 20th century. But we know now that our universe, the expansion rate far exceeds any ability for gravity to pull it back. It's never going to collapse on itself. We talked about our universe not having ending, but having what's called the heat death from the second law of thermodynamics and this type of stuff, but I won't get into that. But again, that drops out. So the only thing we're left with that really makes rational sense is a self-existent reality, okay? That there must be something that was not made, something that exists solely on its own. It's not dependent on anything else for existence. Since both the illusion rule and the infinite loop hypothesis require something to create those get you back to the same problem of needing a self-existence reality. So really your choices are that there is some self-existent reality out there, or there's an infinite loop. Excuse me, an infinite regress. This made this, made this, made this, and it goes on infinitely. We talked about the infinite regress not being that rational. So your best option, okay, is that there is a self-existent reality. So where I'm getting with this, instead of asking the question, if God made the universe, who made God? The more meaningful question to ask is, what would be the nature of a self-existent reality? Because you're stuck with, there has to be some self-existent reality that created our universe. Now, would this self-existent reality have a consciousness? Okay, would it be something mindless, or would it be required to have a consciousness? It would also, we realize, would be something that has to exist beyond our dimensions of space and time. Now, there's been some things that have been proposed as a self-existent reality prior to the 20th century, prior to Big Bang cosmology. They thought our universe was infinitely old and it had always been here. It was viewed that our universe itself was a self-existent reality. Okay, well, that went away because we found out in the 20th century when general relativity and so forth, that our universe did have a beginning. And our universe was created by something. So that went away. Now, here's another thing that's proposed. Okay, now this is, I'm just going to kind of touch on, but this is a big area in astrophysics now, is a concept of a multiverse. Are we the only universe? And there's some thoughts that there might be other universes out there. And there are a lot of philosophical things leading people to this question. But there are some scientific things that kind of raise that as a possibility as well. And I don't want to kind of get us too lost in this. But some of the philosophical things driving somebody to that is it does offer a way to try and come up with a naturalistic expectation for the creation of our universe, as opposed to a theistic one. That maybe there's some other layer out there that's creating multiple universes, we're just one of those. So maybe there's this creation entity out there. The second thing is our universe is extremely fine-tuned. And that a fine-tuning implies a mind, implies a designer behind it. The only way you can get around that is the lottery ticket example. Like if you have what looks like a winning lottery ticket, you say, "Hey, my gosh, it's very rare to get these winning numbers. Did somebody give me the right numbers?" No, you just happen to be one of 30 million people that won the lottery, and there's 29 plus million losers out there. Okay, and it just appears like it's designed because you just happen to have the winning ticket. So if that's the case, you're saying there has to be a vast number of other universes out there with different laws of physics, with different initial conditions. We just are lucky to be in the one universe that has those right conditions. So it's a way to get out of the fine-tuning problem. Now, we have just stepped out of, because we cannot measure, if there is another universe, it's something we would never be able to measure or detect. And because of that, we stepped out of the physics classroom into the philosophy classroom. We're now in the realm of philosophy, metaphysics, and theology when you start discussing multiverse models. But this is something that's been presented as a self-existing reality that doesn't have a consciousness, that doesn't have a mind. Because you can get rid of the fine-tuning argument that suggests a mind, by there being multiple universes and we just have another one that works. Okay. Can you prove this? No. Universes are beyond what we can measure. Now, there are some multiverse models out there, okay, that you won't, and the main models center around one type of thought that you can't prove, but you could disprove those models by certain measurements that I believe it's the Planck satellite that was launched is going to take. It has to do with what's called the curvature of a universe, and I get lost by trying to get into that, but they might be able to disprove a whole host of multiverse models, but you'll never really kind of be able to prove if they exist. But kind of going at this philosophically, first of all, if there is another universe, would that be a challenge to Christianity? Well, no, Christianity is really silent on there being other universes. Actually, the Christian doctrine is at least a two-universe multiverse. We're talking about the creation we're in now, and it talks about a new creation coming, which I, from what I pointed out in Revelation, is describing different laws of physics, so it really has to be a different universe. So really, more than one universe, in a sense, kind of fits into Christianity. So it's not like there's any really challenge to that. Just like finding out that stars or other things, something like our sun, isn't really... You know, the Bible is silent on there being kind of other stars or other planets kind of thing. But I want to kind of address this.
Can I ask another question?
Sure.
And if it's, you can skip it if you want. Why are you assuming that there needs to be other laws of physics? Uh-huh. Couldn't there be other universes if the laws of physics still existed as we know them, but there was just a different beginning point? Or a different raw matter that, you know, they started with, because then you could get onto a different trajectory and have something completely different.
Because
even though the same laws are affecting it.
Because our laws of physics are so finely tuned for life, really for human life, for advanced life, how could they be so finely tuned? You know, how could they be just so? Something must have known how to make them just so. So either you, the only way you could get around that is by have is if it was luck that our laws of physics were right. Okay, the only way it could be luck is if there were, if there's something that's randomly generating universes with different laws of physics, and we just happen to get the right one. It's sort of like the only way you can have a winning lottery ticket is that there were 30 million losing lottery tickets made. If there's only one lottery ticket made, you wouldn't expect that that'd be the winning lottery ticket. And so that's the thought. It's like, it's glaring how designed our universe is. Okay, so either that's a glaring example that there's an intelligent creator, or we just have the winning lottery ticket, and there's got to be the losing lottery tickets. So that means then if there is something else making other universes, it has to be making them randomly and different than ours. Well, why necessarily would it have to? Why couldn't it just make them all like ours? You know, you sort of get some philosophical challenges to that. Also, the level of fine-tuning of our universe is so extreme, okay? If there is a multiverse thing, the number of other universes would have to be such an extreme number, okay? It's, you're essentially now you're back to a theory with an infinity again. And you're sort of beyond the point of it being rational. So you can't, it's not like to defend a theistic position, I need to say that there couldn't be other universes, okay? It's just that to defend a theistic position, the challenge that a multiverse scenario could explain away the fine-tuning, okay, is a very extreme position to take.
But hold on there.
Sure.
I just want to understand that right. So you're saying if you take the statistic probability side of this, that would be an extreme position. I'm just going to play devil's advocate here.
Sure.
To assume that there is a creator of which we cannot explain at all is therefore not an extreme logical jump.
Well, no, there definitely is a big jump. It's something you would kind of want to see evidence for.
Right.
But fine-tuning is evidence for a designer in a mind. Okay? So you have to see what's another alternate explanation to that. If you had no evidence or no fine-tuning, you just said, hey, God made the universe, well, you are taking a jump or a leap of faith in a sense, because you're just saying, I think something made this, although I don't really have any evidence for this. It's sort of like you dump out a can of alphabet soup, and or you come to a bowl of alphabet soup and it spells something, like it, you know, has a famous thing. Was that just because it got randomly dumped out, or did somebody come and arrange all the letters just so?
Right.
Okay. The fact that they're arranged, it says, hey, there's got to be a designer behind this. I mean, that's what that evidence points to. Now, if there's only three letters in that can of alphabet soup and they happen to spell the word and, A-N-D, then they could have also had spelled Dan and you would have said, hey, there's another word, or Nat or something. But it's like, that's something that you could explain away by chance. But if it's something very extreme, you're getting beyond the reason to explain it by chance. And so that's the argument. And that's, you'd have to say, one, we don't know that other universes exist. The fact that they exist is a step of faith, okay, to make the assumption that they exist. But for that to be a rational explanation, to explain away the level of fine-tuning that we have is a huge stretch, because the level of fine-tuning we have is so extreme. In fact, virtually everything we can measure is fine-tuned.
This is maybe just a side track that you don't want to go down, and I feel fine if you don't. Mm-hmm. But could it be possible that as our society develops, we get more comfortable with larger numbers, and at some point, our comfort with larger numbers, and I'll explain that theory, mm-hmm. our comfort with larger numbers will then kind of work out the fact that it's not so statistically impossible. For example,
mm-hmm.
you can imagine a time X number of years ago when a large number of people, or a large number, largest number in existence would have been 1,000 or 10,000 in a kingdom. You know, how many apples do we have in the kingdom? You know, count them all up, 1,000 or 10,000, because it's a relatively contained thing. You move into a global world, and now someone using, you know, mathematics and knowing there's apple trees all over places, oh, there's all these apples. But there's still a finite thing, because it's how many apple trees can there possibly be in the world? It's still finite.
Right.
You move into a web world or an atomic-based world, and now the numbers go into the trillions and billions and Googles.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if you said to a king, oh, you have a 1 in 1,000,000 chance, you'd say, oh my God, that's beyond my, I can't even imagine that. So that must be scientific design. But if you said someone who works on things that are in the Google, you know, number range,
mm-hmm.
1 in 1,000,000 chance, pretty likely.
Well, I see where you go with that. I would say it's not working with bigger numbers that would make this more comfortable. Where you would get that is if, again, it kind of comes back, I guess, to the lottery ticket in a sense. If you have a ticket that's a very rare ticket, okay, and you have in your mind that at most, say, there could only be like saying you're a small town, there could only be maybe 1,000 people that played the lottery. This ticket is so rare. Well, out of 1,000 people playing the lottery, it's still not explainable. You would have got this ticket.
Mm-hmm.
But oh, wait a minute! You realize there's more than our town. There's the whole country. There's 250 million suckers in this country that bought a lottery ticket.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and so by seeing the numbers of your pop, it's really the number of the population, okay, of samples, or lottery tickets in a sense to get the one
right.
That's right. Now, you talk about the probability of things, okay? The probability of something being likely, okay, is based on the sample size of things.
Relativity, basically.
Right, right. It is another example why you can get evolutionary changes are much more predicted and explainable with bacteria, because you got trillions and trillions of bacteria just in a sponge used to clean your sink.
Right, that's, yeah, that's
versus tigers where there's only 3,000 left.
Yeah.
Okay, kind of thing. But in terms of understanding numbers, in terms of if you're saying what are the likelihood of something, okay, there's a point when you get it's like 1 to the 10 to the 10th power or something like this. They say the odds of something happening is identically zero.
Mm-hmm.
You learn they're kind of small.
Right.
And if you look, the most fine-tuned aspect of the universe has to do with the ratio of dark energy or the dark energy constant. I forget exactly how that's phrased, and this I don't understand it, but it's the amount of dark energy in the universe is tuned to 1 to 10 to the 100th. That's 10 with 100 zeros, and that is just so extremely beyond anything that you would define as not being the odds of zero.
Right.
For example, we've only got something like 10 to the 70th protons in the whole known universe. And so you're looking at something that's that extreme.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a similar type of question. Was the book Harry Potter written? Or was it just by chance a bag drop with a bunch of alphabet pasta and spelled out the whole Harry Potter novel? There is a remote possibility that that's the case, but it's a much more rational assumption to assume that there is an author. And so that's what you get into. It's like if anybody takes a position that a multiverse can explain away design, okay, can be that self-existent reality that doesn't have a mind, you're looking at something that is just so far extreme beyond anything we would assume is possible based on all of our knowledge of the universe, is that really a rational position to take?
But isn't that, this, taking that position, mm-hmm. isn't that based on, you know, we're human beings, our lifespan are, you know, let's say, 100 years at maximum.
Right.
So when we say, oh, the Earth has been around for, I don't know how long.
Yeah, like 3.8, well, Earth is Earth, yeah, 3.8, like 4 billion years, let's say, give or take.
4 billion years. So we say, well, that's you know, again, a really big number.
Yeah.
But perhaps in the grandest scheme of things, 4 billion years is that. Mm-hmm. And we can have billions of multiverse attempts, which finally play out into the universe we have here, mm-hmm. and we exist here, and we exist for such a speck of a time that we think, my God, it's computationally beyond our, you know, it goes back to, you know, the core assumption is the statistic probability.
Right, right.
And what I'm saying is it perhaps that human beings are trapped within their own frames,
mm-hmm.
whether that's 24-hour day, whether that's 100-year lifespan, whether that's, you know, no one thought of a number greater than X before,
yeah.
you know, microscopes and, you know, for high-level mathematics and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Is it possible that it's not what, to grossly butcher the word you said, very improbable,
mm-hmm.
that it's only very improbable in a humanistic
mm-hmm.
framework,
mm-hmm.
and that if we were to be able to extract ourselves away from a humanistic framework, that it would make perhaps more sense, perhaps be more likely
mm-hmm.
a scenario.
I would not, and again, this is how we're now out of physics into philosophy, and these are the
right.
arguments that are out there. Myself, I would. It's not that it would make it any more likely. It's just, can we accept things that are that unlikely? And I would kind of still say, I don't see it as making it any more acceptable.
Okay.
I think it would almost make it less acceptable by now we have more of an understanding of numbers, of knowing when we get to certain probabilities, what you can kind of define as zero and what you can't. But it does go back to one of the problems when Big Bang cosmology was first proposed is a similar issue is the origin of life issue. Okay, how did you get the first chemicals to assemble to make a single cell? And you're looking at things that are like so minusculely probable. Well, once you have a universe that's infinitely old, okay, you get into that whole issue of infinities, the extremely improbable will happen at some point.
Right. Yeah.
Okay. And so, to me, if a multiverse is going to explain this, okay, explain away the design, you're looking at something that has to be so large, it's essentially an infinite number of multiverses. And we're back to the example of dealing with a theorem that is as rational as the hotel example, a full hotel, mm-hmm. an infinite number of tourists show up that want to get in, and somehow you can make room. You know, it's like
yeah.
to sort of. And so, which is the more meaningful? Which is, I guess, the more rational? What's to make sense to approach is to say that hey, this design really speaks to designer, or that I'm going to assume that there is this multiverse thing out there that I have no way of measuring, no way of detecting, no way of knowing its existence, and somehow even with this extreme unlikeliness, it managed to produce a universe like ours.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, which is the more rational thing?
Using just to answer this, and then I'll stop.
Sure.
Using what we understand
uh-huh.
as a collective whole, and I'll say not allowing random things beyond that, absolutely. You know,
right.
You're correct. I guess where I'm at is thinking that if you pull way back in time, people didn't understand a lot of things.
Mm-hmm.
And this thing in the air, what is that? Oh, it's the moon? Yeah, that's so-and-so's. That's a god. And fire's a god, this is a god, there's all these gods. And slowly over time, humans have evolved understandings of certain things or certain concepts. And they said, yeah, well, those people thought that was a god. It's just, that's just fire, and here's how you do it. And this is this, and these are, you know, this is how these things happen. And I guess I'm leaving a placeholder for future generations of mankind to figure out this, maybe the final final connection piece between multiverses or the statistical probability question or the, you know, the proof. You know what I mean? I guess I'm not in need of the answer today, and I have like a placeholder for my, you know, grandkids generation, or you know, maybe 50,000 years in the future, where someone will, you know, figure out this God question. But if you're left with just what we know today, then your logic is, you know, sound.
Yeah, Don, I'm really glad you brought this up, because this discussion we had, this is what's being played out in the astrophysics community right now. Mm-hmm. I mean, in fact, if some people will say that the fact that our universe appears fine-tuned is evidence that there are other universes. Mm-hmm. Because of, for that very, very reason, the fact that you have a winning lottery ticket is evidence that there has to be losing lottery tickets out there. Do you see that?
Yeah.
Do you see how people kind of use that argument? So this is kind of let you kind of know where you know what's out there. This is right in the forefront of where thought and stuff is.
Yeah, I believe we're there.
Yeah.
Exactly. Without knowing where everyone else is, I feel like, you know, I don't know where else we are, but it feels like we're on the edge.
Now the thing is, though, you've got two things that you've got to explain. You've got to explain the creation of a universe, and you've got to explain the fine tuning. An infinite multi-universe would explain away the fine-tuning. You still need to explain the creation, because what made this multi-universe structure? And something that gets into what are called inflationary views of Big Bang theories. Okay, there's the difference between expansion and inflation. Well, all Big Bang models see our universe is expanded. Some of them say that there's one point early in the expansion where for a split second it expanded at a rate faster than the speed of light, and they call that an inflationary model. Okay, and it gets into really, then again, this is way beyond my pay grade, but the thinking with that, there could be this multiverse thing that's expanding that creates these pockets that sort of make universes, and that's sort of one model that's kind of behind these multiverse things. However, that means that this multiverse structure itself is expanding. And based on the theorems and thoughts on this, anything that's expanding itself would have to have a beginning, and itself would have to be a cause. And if there is a multiverse structure that's out there, that's a non-theistic one, that's a naturalistic one, they can't think of a way to get around that causality problem, that itself would need a cause. Mm-hmm. So you're still kind of left with that. Let me take one other whole tack to this multiverse thing before we move on, okay? Well, if there is a multiverse structure out there, if we are one of many universes, the argument is that it's not, to explain our universe, is that it's not fine-tuned, okay? It's somehow random that gives us the appearance of being fine-tuned. Like something that makes lottery tickets isn't fine-tuned. It's just that the one lottery ticket that's right has an appearance. Well, what if we discovered that there are other universes? We find a way to somehow measure them. It's very likely that we could find that these other universes and the whole multiverse thing is also fine-tuned, and it makes the naturalistic explanation problem that much more worse. And let's look what happened. Well, first we thought there's only one planet. We discover Jupiter and Saturn are other planets. Well, gosh, if there's a lot of planets and isn't there life anywhere, then looking at these other planets, we realize they're nothing like Earth. Earth is fine-tuned. Okay, Earth is special. Then we discover that there's other stars. When we realize, there must be a lot of suns, we start to study them, realize they're nothing like ours. They're fine-tuned. Basically, we are the right planet around the right type of star, extremely rare star, have the right host of other planets in our solar system, have just the right moon, are in the right type of galaxy, in the right place of that galaxy, in the right galaxy cluster, and in the right galaxy supercluster, and at just the right time in 13.8 billion years of the universe's history to allow man to survive. Like, each time we've discovered another volume element in astronomy and the universe has gotten bigger, it's only gotten more and more and more fine-tuned. And now all of a sudden, supposedly we'll find, discover some another element above us, a multiverse thing, and somehow find that that's not fine-tuned, and somehow that explains away the fine-tuning we have. Is that really a rational position to take? And I've heard it also said this way, that if you look at the discoveries that have been made in terms of fine-tuning in the last 20 years and average them out, every month it gets something like a million times less likely that we're here by accident. So if you don't find the need for a creator, or an intelligent creator, to be behind our universe, just wait another month and it'll be a million times more likely. I've kind of heard it put that way. But anyhow, a bit of a digression there, but we digressed into the cutting edge of thought around this. So you guys kind of got your minds exposed for that.
Are you suggesting that if there are multiverses, that they're kind of like practices? Like, first try, not so good. Second try, that's a little better. Like when you make pancakes and the first one kind of stinks.
Yes, but if you take a multiverse, a naturalistic, now that means something that explains a non-theistic view of things. If you take a naturalistic view, there are practices, it's just that you don't have a mind with the practice. It's just something randomly spitting out completely different universes. Lo and behold, one of them happened to be the perfect pancake.
Okay, got it.
So, with just the right type of maple syrup, too. Now, the last thing I want to mention on this in terms of a self-existent reality, and I have yet to read Hawking's latest book, but I literally have the book, I want to read it, but one of the things they kind of say, given the laws of physics, our universe would be inevitable. Well, I disagree with that, because you've got not just the laws of physics that are fine-tuned, but the initial conditions of our universe and other things beyond that. But why, given the laws of physics? You know, wouldn't the laws of physics need a creator, because the laws of physics themselves are fine-tuned? You're sort of saying, giving something that's fine-tuned, our universe is inevitable. And really, is that a rational explanation? Because we can understand the laws of physics, but there's no way the laws of physics will ever be able to understand us. You know, can an effect be greater than its cause, in a sense? So that's sort of another philosophical thing that's out there. So I think basically, the best explanation is that there is a self-existent reality that transcends space and time, and I'm going to make the argument that the best explanation is that the self-existent reality has a consciousness, intelligence, and purpose. Okay? And that's in light of that whole, you know, multiverse thing. Otherwise, we're in that whole multiverse debate, and kind of where that all is. So, that went quick. Okay. The last one I want to talk to, we do three points, okay? Law of causality, the four options, the best being a self-existent reality. I want to talk to the last about dimensionality, this question, if God made the universe, who made God? Now, for those of you that are listening to this tape, go to YouTube and see if you can find Dr. Quantum Visits Flatland. And pause and come back to this. How many of you saw that link? How many of you guys saw that link? Class, how many did the homework? Those that didn't do the homework, please raise your hands. Shame, shame, shame. But what this is, go watch it. It's a fascinating cartoon of a, like, this guy that's seen a two-dimensional world, okay? And these little two-dimensional creatures, and he tries to explain to this two-dimensional creature that there's really this third dimension. And just when there's that, and things that seem impossible, like this two-dimensional creature is in one square room that's like a square box. There's another square box that has something in it, and it says, even though that's all sealed up, I can know what's in there. And he says, well, how can you know? Because that's all sealed up. Well, I'm looking from above, you know, at this, and he can't understand what is above me. And so some things that from a two-dimensional perspective, you know, are completely sort of understandable, you can't understand. But once you go to a third-dimensional perspective, all of a sudden the lights go on and they're understandable. And I kind of gave an example. Supposing we were to ask a question, suppose we had this class 1,000 years ago, and obviously we wouldn't be recording it then, and have some scribe writing it on a goat skin. But supposing we asked the question, could the surface of Earth be both finite but not have any boundary or edge? Be finite, okay, but not have a boundary or edge, meaning you could never sail in a ship and fall off the edge, or never hike and come to the edge and fall off the edge, or come to some wall, okay? But yet the Earth doesn't go on for forever. And somebody would think, how could that possibly be? Because if the Earth doesn't go on forever, it's got to have some edge. Well, you realize that our Earth isn't flat. The surface of our Earth is wrapped around a three-dimensional sphere, okay? And so it doesn't have any edge. Once you get that perspective, you realize, oh, I can see how there's a fixed amount of land on the Earth, and it never has any edge. Well, it turns out if you go any direction, you eventually could go, in fact, in theory, go around the whole world, which eventually Magellan did. So you see how that conceptual jump that's made, and it's also been proposed, our universe, you know, how big is our universe? Is our universe finite? Is there a, even though there's billions of galaxies, hundreds of billions of galaxies, 100 billions of stars, is there a limit to how many stars and galaxies are there, but yet no edge to a universe? There's no place you could go and be at the last star and just look out into blackness. Well, it's possible that our universe is essentially a three-dimensional universe wrapped around the surface of a four-dimensional sphere, in a sense, okay? So our universe is possible, and we can't visualize that. You can't visualize a four-dimensional sphere. But you could see how, if you could carry that conceptual jump to what we're faced with, okay, you could have that there is a fixed number of stars and galaxies in this universe, but it has no edge, it has no boundaries. Now, scientists don't know what the shape of our universe is. That's one question they're trying to answer. Okay, but that possibility is out there. Apparently there have been astronomers that have done the question of looking as far as they can in one direction at the distant galaxies, and then looking as far as they can in the exact opposite direction and see if they can see the same stuff from the other side. Okay, so actually have tried that. But it's most likely, even if our universe is shaped that way, it's too big for them ever to see that far. But you can see how that question of the finite of our space completely changes when you make a dimensional jump and throw another dimension in there.
That's what I'm planning on future generations to figure out.
That's right. That's right. Well, this question of how could there be a self-existent reality if God made the universe and made God could completely take another view, okay, as if God's realm or the self-existent reality's realm has more than one dimension of time or has a different time dimensionality than we have. Okay, we think of only one dimension of time. Time had a beginning, no end. It's linear. You can only go one direction on it. Okay, but what if time is two dimensions in some other realm, or the dimension now is different? I can't visualize that at all. You know, and sitting in traffic today in New Time, only in one dimension, is getting wasted. Now, never going to recover that. But I won't go into that. But that's the thing, is that we're asking this question within our dimensions, a three space dimensions and one time dimension. Now, in many other talks I did, I talked about how God is described in the Bible as something outside of our dimensionality of space and time. It could be, if there is a heaven, okay, if there is a God, and if we die, and if we are going there, okay, that all of a sudden when we cross that barrier, it might be just like this Dr. Quantum Visits Flatland, and all of a sudden these questions of who made God, all of a sudden it's like, I understand now. This now makes sense. A lot of those questions might just drop away. 2 weeks ago, I gave a lecture on the second law of thermodynamics, and I said that given the second law of thermodynamics, you can't have any future paradise in our universe where there is no death. You've got to get out of the way from the second law of thermodynamics. The only way you're going to do that is to get out of our one dimension of time, three dimensions of space. And I talked about the Bible's the only book that most religious works that talk of a future paradise talk of a return to Eden, okay? Like it cleaning up of this world or going back to a state in this world. The Bible is the only one that talks about a new creation that, if you look what it's describing, has different dimensionality. You've got to get out of these dimensions. So it talks about it there. And here again, I would say what this question is if we are dealing with a God that doesn't exist with our dimensionality, from his perspective, that question could be a complete non-issue. And kind of the last thing I want to sort of, so, and there's no way I can really sort of clarify that anymore. Just think that, hey, there could be a conceptual jump. The Bible describes a God dimension, from a dimensionality that is a conceptual jump. Okay. Once you make that this question of how could God exist without a creator could be just very clear and understandable. But I want to now close on talking a little bit more about dimensionality. And this is, to me, is going to get into a couple of scriptures that to me just sort of popped out before anybody else sort of pointed these things to me. Now, going to get into some physics again, way beyond my pay grade. This, I don't even want to hint I understand. But we have three dimensions of space, one dimension of time. When the Big Bang happened, and how the physicists know this, I don't know. I don't know if they're smoking too much pot or what the deal is. But when our Big Bang happened, when our universe started, it started with 10 dimensions, not the four we have. Nine space dimensions and one time dimension. It started expanding in these 10 dimensions, and the nine of these in these space dimensions, the universe started expanding after this minusculely short time, I think like 1 times 10 to the negative 40 second power. It's like 1 divided by 10 with 42 zeros. After this very short period of time, 6 of the 9 dimensions stopped expanding and rolled over on themselves and rolled up like a scroll, okay, and stopped expanding. The other 3 dimensions, height, width, and length, fortunately kept expanding. Otherwise, we'd be living in a 2-dimensional world, okay? And then traffic would be that much worse. But anyhow... So I'm not even going to hint at trying to tell you guys how to visualize that. I sure can't. I don't think anybody can.
Are the scrolls at all related to the forces, like electromagnetic forces or anything like that, or completely separate?
It's completely separate of that. It ties in with something called string theory, which I don't fully understand either.
Okay.
And some things with quantum mechanics, but I think more string theory. But how you would make a dimension disappear is if you have a flat piece of paper that's effectively two-dimensional. If you roll it up, okay, and roll it up super tightly, like a scroll, where it becomes one line, it kind of then turns into something that's one dimension instead of two. And so that's why they describe it rolled up like a scroll. Now, so that's the terminology that the physicists use, this rolling up like a scroll, which I can't, you know, I don't fully understand why. But let me talk about what the Bible says about this new creation. Okay, Revelations 21, 1 through 2. Then I saw a new heaven and a new earth, for the first heaven and the first earth had passed away, and there is no longer any sea. And the reason for reference of no longer any sea is that for Israel that was a source of danger for them because they got attacked from the sea. And I saw the holy city, New Jerusalem, coming down out of heaven from God, made ready as a bride adorned for her husband. Well, if you look what it describes about this new Jerusalem, it's talking about stuff that doesn't exist within our dimensions of, within our laws of physics. So it talks about a new heaven and a new earth, okay, something new being created, and with other things you can infer different laws of physics. Okay, now let me, there's other passages in the Bible that prophesy reference to this. Let me now listen to read what it says in Isaiah 34 verse 4. This is written 1500 years before Revelations. You know, obviously a different author. Nobody lived that long in. And all the stars in the sky will be dissolved. The heavens rolled up like a scroll, and all the star holes will fall, withered like leaves on a vine, like shriveled figs from the fig tree. Why does it scribe to the heavens rolled up like a scroll? Of all the possible analogies it could have gave, Revelation 6:14 talks about, again, refers to this end time thing. The heavens receded like a scroll being rolled up, and every mountain and island was removed from its place. And I think there's another translation that says, like, the heavens are split and rolled up like a scroll. Now, if you were to go to, I've heard some discussions by some of these, like, way out physicists that think of things, that think, how could our universe disappear? And they talk about some ways our dimensions could be bent, and it's very possible that our universe could then, the dimensions could collapse and roll up. Okay? So, I mean, of all the language you could have possibly picked, and is this a coincidence? Now, I talked about other types of things like this, like it talked about the heavens expanding. Well, we know that our heavens do expand. The heavens being stretched is the word they use, of all the analogies they could use. If you get one sort of coincidence like this, I could kind of write it up. But when you start to get a lot of coincidences like this, I've got to ask, did something write this, okay, that really knows a lot more about our dimensionality and the way the thing's set up than they could have 1,000 years ago, and really kind of knows what's going to happen? So that's why I bring in that last thing, of that thing about dimensionality, just kind of find fascinating. So at that, we will call it a night.